Howdy, everybody. Welcome to Boys Town with Aaron, a Timeline Earth production. I'm going to start this off with a quote from our boy Vladimir Lenin. In 1897, he writes, "The most progressive strata of the bourgeoisie defend certain prerogatives of the bureaucracy and are opposed to the election of all officials, opposed to the complete abolition of electoral qualifications, opposed to making officials directly responsible to the people, etc. Because these strata realize that the proletariat will take advantage of such complete democratization in order to use it against the bourgeoisie." Now, why am I quoting this? If you're new to the program, you should know that it's been my mission to draw some intersections between Marxist-Leninism and the bottom right. So how do we arrive at an intersection from this excerpt? Let's break it down. The most progressive strata of the bourgeoisie defend certain prerogatives of the bureaucracy. Let's stop right there. In the context of America in 2021, our bourgeoisie is harder to define than simply in terms of material condition, whether they're rich or poor or middle class, more so in terms of influence, their ability to go on social media and affect, or even legacy media, and affect some sort of social change or policy change. For all intents and purposes, the modern-day bourgeoisie claims ownership over the minds of their audience, particularly the highest strata of that bourgeoisie. In most cases, the highest strata of that bourgeoisie didn't achieve their status democratically or through the merit of their product. And that's where the bureaucracy comes in. We touched on this in the last episode. In order to manufacture consent, you cannot have dissidents get any viewing time whatsoever, unless you can control the narrative. In the case of the United States, the administrative or bureaucratic arm of these giant social media corporations will very much undemocratically institute measures like shadow bans or algorithmic adjustments designed to flag certain words or designed to promote certain hashtags or demote problematic ones. This is neither democratic nor meritocratic. And yet, time and time again, you'll see these influencers, these bourgeoisie, praise those actions. You have to realize that these people would never want to go back to the days where the algorithms and the shadow bans don't exist, because these strata realize that the proletariat will take advantage of such complete democratization in order to use it against the bourgeoisie. All right, moving on, I want to talk about the question of reform versus revolution. And this question was hotly debated back at the turn of the 19th century. On the reform side, you had people like Edward Bernstein, the editor of the illegal German Socialist Democratic Party's newspaper, arguing that Marx and Engels' view on revolution was outmoded and that everybody should simply focus on reforming the current system bit by bit. On the side of revolution, you had another SPD member, Rosa Luxemburg, who asserted that genuine socialism, which is the self-emancipation of the working class, would come through mass violence, general strikes, and uprisings. In the interest of not scaring off any new listeners, I'm going to leave you with this. The state is not a neutral, objective arbitration or protection force designed to ensure order, liberty, and equality. It's an institution with the purpose of guaranteeing institutional hegemony of the ruling class over its subjects. Its self-defense mechanisms are many and robust. Wars of territorial expansion and resource appropriation almost always occur during times of social or economic upheaval. The same rings true for any and all curtailing of dissent, and the masses will clamor for it because they desire a return to normalcy, even if it's a new normal in which they are materially worse off than before. So long as the machine of manufactured consent keeps humming, the masses will continue to abide. So just as Marx and Engels both predicted as inevitable and advocated for an eventual revolution, so too do I. Let's take all of this and bring it back in the context of... I've talked at length about the pernicious influence of NAP absolutists, those that believe that the non-aggression principles should be applied universally to both the political realm and the personal realm. And what really gets me is when they wholeheartedly agree that their enemies are not playing by their rules, and yet they continue to advocate for evangelization and the parliamentary process to bring about their goals. How is that working out for you? The second there's even the appearance of an impetus towards violence by either the right or the left, they can sit on their pedestals and wag their fingers. If we are to be described as the Bolshevik wing of libertarianism, then they would be described as the opportunist wing. What that means is that they are content to just sit around and wait for political opportunities to arise in order to seize upon them and achieve some progress. This goes back to what I was talking about earlier, the state's robust defense mechanism. They will allow you to have victory so long as they can manage the fallout, or so long as it comes at no cost to the ruling class. So I can't stress this enough. The goal is to smash the institutions of the state, not to perfect them. This praxis can be seen in our corner of the Twitter sphere, where we've organized into what's known as Tower Gang, where each individual member posts a single letter, and members behind them reply to spell out something inflammatory on a piece of bourgeois agitprop. This group is nimble and flexible and operates on a consensus model. Is it revolutionary? Not quite. But it does manage to avoid algorithmic bans, and it requires that Twitter moderators physically look at the thread in order to administer punishment. I also can't stress enough that now is not the time to be thinking about any type of violent action, en masse or individually. We simply don't have the organization or the infrastructure to affect anything. Which brings me to another parallel between today's bottom right and yesterday's top left. We don't have victory conditions, even among the revolutionary wing of the bottom right. What do we do once we smash the state? I imagine expropriating the property of the ruling class would be a contentious suggestion. Physical and cultural exile of bourgeois leadership probably wouldn't go over well either. What I'm trying to say is that we, on the bottom right, don't have a consensus on the process. The process before, during, and after reform, or before, during, and after revolution. And this is a weakness that demands self-examination. What separates Marxist-Leninists from left anarchists is precisely that understanding of the process. Lenin writes, "A Marxist is one who extends the recognition of the class struggle to the recognition of the dictatorship of the proletariat," meaning there needs to be consensus for revolutionaries on what happens after the revolution. And in this sense, it's the phase of history in Marxism known as the dictatorship of the proletariat, whereby the lower class seizes the institutions of the state and enacts a complete democratization of those institutions. Now, we as libertarians, we probably don't want that. I would be remiss if I didn't mention that there is a libertarian theoretical foundation for this process, and that can be found in the works of Samuel Edward Conkin III. Speaking of which, I'm going to fill my face with food real quick. Oh, God. Samuel Edward Conkin III goes through the entire process of how agorism can introduce a classless, stateless society, starting with the productive class engaging in black and gray market activity and eventually rendering the state irrelevant. One of the strengths of agorism is that black and gray markets are universally utilized by individuals of all ideological stripes. Any revolutionary strategy absolutely has to, take into account the technological benefits that agorists, whether they're conscious of their agorism or not, have brought into common usage and accessibility. Things like cryptocurrency, virtual private networks, the Tor network. All of these tools are indispensable to radicals of all stripes. So while we patiently await for a critical mass of people to get tired of having a third of their income expropriated by the state, get tired of having their sons and daughters consume propaganda to the point of being willing to turn them over to the authorities, and finally wake up to the fact that reform isn't an option, how do we accelerate that process? And what are our victory conditions? My suggestion for the former question is keep coming up with new and innovative ways to counter-signal to the top strata of the bourgeois. As to the latter, it's important to acknowledge the fact that there are going to be many sticking points which threaten the solidarity of any revolutionary movement. But the good news is we get plenty of time to think about it because we are nowhere near taking the insurgency to meet space. So lock your doors, roll up your windows, and welcome to Boys Town, faggots. Today I have two special guests with me.
One without a penis.
One without a penis, believe it or not. I don't know how you got in here, but... And then one with an extremely large penis. Mr.
Yes,
Pete Quinones, the owner and proprietor of Free Man Beyond the Wall. And we also have Miss Robin Dominic. She is a Libertarian Party, State of Missouri, vice chair, right?
Yep, vice chair.
Hell yeah.
Don't know how that happened. It was like really an accident, actually.
A happy accident.
Well.
Well, yeah, I guess it is technically the Libertarian Party.
Yeah, we do our best. Actually, to be honest, the Missouri Party is very chillaxed. There's not a whole lot of drama except for how the previous vice chair got evicted, but everyone seems to get along.
Yeah. So earlier I was talking about reform versus revolution, and knowing you personally, I know that you don't publicly Fed post too much, although you do, and when you do, it's great. But you're probably more on the reform side. You want to, in general, you want to take control of institutions and then perfect them. Or do you want to take control and destroy them?
Yeah, mostly destroy. It depends on the day of the week, how much coffee I've had, and if people have pissed me off in traffic.
Yeah, yep, as it usually does. And Pete, you are kind of in the same middle ground, but on the opposite spectrum. You want to not take control and just destroy.
Oh, no, I want to take control and destroy.
Yep.
I wrote an article about this, about getting a local mayor elected and how you would do it and how you could you'd have to figure out who you can fire and hire. And once you have a lawyer and everything, and you just fire everyone when you get in there, you have to find out if you can fire the police chief and everything. You bring in your own people and just start dismantling the government.
Yep.
And that's, to me, that would be the Machiavellian way to do it. That would be the way the princes would do it. So I like that idea.
Yeah. One thing I've been reading from Lenin is that the state has a very robust self-defense mechanism. And it's our task to kind of bypass or just blow through those self-defense mechanisms. And I do remember that article. And if you can pull that off, it would require a lot of organization and a lot of coordination. But if you could pull it off, it would be fucking amazing. And it would be, you know, a case study pretty much.
Yeah, and they'd probably also come in and kill you. But, you know, hey, you got to sacrifice, you know?
Yep.
Well, that's why you start small.
Yep, start small, and then you make yourself a martyr.
Speaking of taking things over, the Missouri State Party is going to have a little bit of a surprise in April when we have our convention, and it gets just absolutely packed with state committee members who are Mises Caucus, new blood into our party.
Yeah. Yeah, you're saying your chairman was like, oh, wow, there's a lot of new members signing up, huh?
Yeah. Gee, Bill, that's unusual. Let's move on to some other topic so I don't have to admit I know anything there.
Oh, yeah.
How's the budget?
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that I've learned is that the political process, like the parliamentarism, does have its place. It's to educate the masses and set the stage for, you know, the takeover.
Well, speaking of setting the stage and everything, because I control the entire convention, that is the one duty of the vice chair, is to plan and prepare the convention. So if it's a shit show, it's my fault. If it's great, it's my fault. But I get to schedule everything. So we're making my election come before we add anybody anywhere else, because I'm going to secure my spot for the next 2 years.
Absolutely. Lead it off with a bang.
And then when we go to Reno, whether or not they try to do a hybrid sort of convention kind of bullshit again, I'm going to make sure that I'm there well before anybody else, so that if that happens to be an issue in 2 more years, we can vote no.
Yeah, and that's going to be kind of an arena of a power struggle, is what can they do to marginalize this takeover, to kind of block it as much as they can. And like you said, a hybrid convention is certainly one way to do that.
It is. And, you know, I hate to say it, but if they really wanted to stop us, try harder. People are not coming to your caucus because your caucus is boring and you're not being unapologetically libertarian or anarchist. it's not inspiring.
Absolutely. And that's kind of where Pete comes in on the periphery and puts out all of this agitprop to inspire people to make enemies.
Well, I think, you know, I just want to say about like my whole mayoral takeover kind of thing. It's straight out of Hoppe. I mean, this isn't like some, you know, statist libertarian kind of idea. I mean, this is the kind of thing Hoppe would endorse, you know, in What Must Be Done from 1996. And all the Hoppians, you know, who make fun of agorism and, you know, because it's so low class and everything. So I'm sure they should probably like that. But yeah, I think that I'm fine with being the bad guy in the Mises Caucus. I'm fine with being the one who calls all of these people faggots and, you know, tells them that they're going to be purged. I have no problem with that at all. And if people want to hate me, I'm good with that. A lot of people like me. The people who like me, they're the people I want to like. I don't want those faggots to like me. So yeah.
Well, I'm definitely on the nicer side of things. Like I want this takeover so that we have active people doing actual liberty activism, because I don't see our party as a vehicle to actually getting people elected. I see it as a vehicle to radicalize people. I see the party as a way to get people invested and involved in doing things in their community and waking other people up, because we're not going to win the presidency. We're probably not going to get anybody else in the Senate or Congress in the next 10 years. We might get some more mayors and city council, but really it's about connecting with other people who feel the same and making them aware that there's a large group of people who are not insane. Well, that's debatable, but a large group of people who really believe in liberty and think a different way. And I want more people from the left and the right to both wake up to that.
Yep. That's, you know, part of the purpose of a political party is to spread consciousness and then indict the system.
Yeah, because it'll take years of people getting used to the idea of liberty before they're ready to vote for it.
Yep. And to your point, Pete, you were talking about agorism. That's something that can be done, you know, in conjunction with the political process. All of the innovations that agorists, whether they're conscious or not, have brought forth to the table, those are all tools that we can use, you know, like fucking cryptocurrency, the Tor network, Signal, Keybase.
Yeah, I, especially over the last 12 months, anybody who has anything bad to say about black gray markets is, you know, really just out of their mind, or the lockdowns, everything that happened didn't affect them. Going forward, we saw that all they have to do is, oh, there's a virus out there, and shut everything down again. And I mean, we could really see where the black and the gray market is going to get people by. I mean, I wrote articles about this early in the lockdowns about making friends with your local grocer. Because if you have an independent grocery store, that guy, if he sees a shortage coming, he's going to be hoarding for himself. If you're friends with him, he may be able to, you know, he may sell you something on the side. But getting back to, I want to talk about, we don't have to talk about this now, but there is a certain point where I would like to talk about Justin Amash, because he is the he's the one thing in this that I see as a problem, as a bigger problem than the left banks.
So I'm trying to be optimistic, and it's difficult, but he's been told by so many people practically trying to suck his dick, begging him to come to the party for years, you know, oh, you're a libertarian, come join our party. So he legitimately thinks he is. And I'm not saying that he's not, but, you know, he's kind of not. But I think he can get there. Yeah, I was a neocon about 6 years ago, and now I'm just scaring my husband with some of the shit I talk about.
I think my problem with Amash is he is too. I put him in the same camp as those left people in the party, especially his Trump derangement syndrome that he obviously had. That worries me a lot, but I honestly believe, and I honestly believe this, that we could out-recruit Justin Amash 100%. I mean, Justin Amash is going after. Who's he going to go after? Republicans? Republicans? I mean, really, the kind of Republicans he's going to be pulling in, who's he going to be pulling in? I mean, what do they believe? What are they going to look at the platform? And, you know, there are a bunch of things. You know, we're going to try, I assume we're going to try and reverse 2006 next year. A lot of that stuff is going to be, you know, poison to some of the people that he would bring.
Yeah.
Yep. He's what's known as just an opportunist. Like, he's content to just wait for opportunities to arise to slowly and steadily, you know, pass reforms that will probably later get, you know, repealed. You know, the next time we have a war or the next pandemic, all of that progress will go away.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think we just have to stick to radical libertarianism, Rothbardian libertarianism, Hobbesian libertarianism, and push forward with that. I mean, where is Republican like doctrine?
Yeah, absolutely nowhere.
It's gotten you into a Republican light party with a splash of, you know, SJWs and bougie leftists.
Yeah, but those people, if they wanted to vote for someone who's going to get in office, they're not going to vote for us.
Absolutely not. No, they won't. They're enemies, plain and simple.
Yep. But the problem is them believing, especially on the national, especially the presidential, believing that they can run Justin Amash. And, you know, after reading the Time article, anybody who read that Time article who thinks that a third party or an unapproved candidate is going to win in the future is out of their mind. I mean, and I honestly believe, and I even titled the article that I wrote about that, it's a perfect example. When you read that article, how you react to that article tells me whether you swallowed a red pill or a blue pill. 100%. I mean, if you read that article as they saved democracy, you know, up against the wall, I mean, that's all that we can do. I mean,
it's a perfect example of that self-defense mechanism of the state. The ruling class will protect their own.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah. And that article is 100%.
Yeah. Yep. The revelation of the method.
So, speaking of protecting your own and agorism and whatnot, is anybody else concerned that sometime in the very near future, we're going to have a housing market crash again, and it's probably going to be worse than 2009?
Oh, I can't wait, because I'm fucking looking to buy. I hope it pops.
Me too. Me too.
Right?
I'm checking Zillow every minute.
Yeah, there's 38 acres behind me that's landlocked in between my neighbor's property and mine. And there's a really steep cliff behind it. And it's just like, I think the state land bank or some shit owns it. And I'm waiting for that.
Yep. Yeah, I'm waiting for anything affordable whatsoever. That's not a fucking 500 square foot condo.
Yeah, I still hunt deer back there anyway, because who's going to tell me not to?
Yeah, that's, you know, the inevitability of a housing bubble popping is... I know we've been saying it. I mean, fuck, think about how long Ron Paul's been saying, oh, we're getting ready for an economic collapse. And I hate to sound like an alarmist, but it's going to happen. Like,
yeah.
Please.
Well, this time, there's real reasons for it to happen again, because right now there's the moratorium on evictions and foreclosures.
Yep.
That's not going to last forever. Eventually, banks are going to be allowed to foreclose. And landlords are going to be allowed to evict, and we're going to have a really bad homeless problem and a flooded housing market, and that's going to affect other things too. So I've actually had my broker take half of all of my investments, my IRA, my savings account, had him take half of it and just put it back into cash so that at least I'll have the value of, you know, the worthless paper money in there if the stocks go down.
Yeah. Once the moratorium's lifted, the bottom's going to fall out, because you got to figure how many people haven't been working, how many people haven't been paying their mortgage payments, and the banks are just chomping at the bit to get rid of them.
Yeah.
And like, on the one hand, I wouldn't be sad if they decided to have a shootout with the banks, with the cops, which, you know, cops, banks, same thing. On the other hand, I kind of want to buy a fucking house. tired of burning my money in a wheelbarrow renting.
Yeah, I got lucky with the 3.25% through the VA, and I've got a great spot. I'm in the city limits, but I'm on acreage. We're in this really weird little neighborhood, and I love it. We're hood adjacent, but on really high ground, so yep, the bullets don't get up there.
Pete,
but that keeps my property taxes low.
Yeah, I'm renting in Georgia.
Damn. You should be able to fucking walk outside, throw a rocket in an affordable house.
No, not at all. The market here has exploded. I mean, even I was looking at 2.3 acres of houses just to have, and it had a slab on it. It had county water and sewage, and it's 2.3 acres with just a slab, no house, $59,000.
Wow,
that's insane. I mean, I love the mountains here. I go there as often as I can, but I mean, that's just nuts. And you know, I've been waiting for that crash too, man. You know, I've been building up the credit, putting aside money, and hopefully, I mean, I hate to say hopefully because it's going to hurt people, but you know.
Yeah, that's the paradox of it.
When there's blood on the street, buy property. You know?
Yeah, so I got a whole ass house on an acre in the city limits for $150,000.
That's unheard of around these parts anyways.
Yeah, Midwest, cheap gas, cheap utilities, cheap housing.
Robin, you were going to say another thing about something you were bitching about the other day.
I bitch about so many things, though. Was it bad drivers or the cunts on the left gaslighting us with the shit that they do but accuse us of?
Oh, yeah, let's get into that. Let's get into the good old gaslight.
Oh, yeah. Oh, because we're all racists and we're Nazis and everything else, when it's your left progressive policies are the ones that are racist. Like, your everything they do, whether it's gun control or measures to subsidize housing and things like that, everything that they do substantially hurts minorities more than it helps anybody.
And when they level these accusations at you, what is your usual response?
I just roll my eyes. I don't really give a shit what people talk about me.
And so. Pete?
What, I just clean my guns? What else is there to do? I've gotten to the point where I am a Nazi. I accept that. I'm a racist. I accept that. And I mean, I'm just going to, I'm, my timeline is going to be one gigantic homage to the JQ.
Yeah. The 6 million step program.
Yeah. Don't forget, we're also fascists.
Yep. So what I've been doing lately is I will agree with about half of whatever accusation they'll level at me. Like, for instance, today, some fucking bougie prog said something like, oh, you just really hate the Jews. That's why when you say the cathedral, you really mean the Jews. And I replied, I mean, I don't care if they're Jewish or not. I just want to gas them. So, I mean, there's like that hybrid approach of, you know, admitting your sin and then also doubling down on it.
So my neighbor across the street, his wife is Jewish like me. And he was like, oh, it's been so cold. I just want to turn the oven on and stand in the kitchen. And both of us looked at him. Like, okay, Jim. Took him a minute.
I've heard there's 25 people have died in Texas because they were running their cars in the garage, the closed garage.
Yeah, I actually haven't watched the news in a few years, so.
Yeah.
Very
that's just Darwin. That's Darwin.
Okay. Yeah.
Whatever. I mean,
what a way to go.
Hey, I've heard it's peaceful.
Yeah, yeah, just take a nap. Yeah. Well,
yeah.
On but that yes, note.
But of course, we're the fascists, though, and even though the left is the one who's trying to restrict the things that we can say and do and people we associate with and even our thoughts, so, yeah, but we're the fascists.
Of we course, are. And why not? You know what? They're looking for fascism. Let's give it to them.
Oh, yeah, I'm about no ready problem. I mean, it's just Alinsky, you know, people. Yeah. It's amazing to me that people don't want to read Alinsky. I mean, it's just, let's go down the rules. Never go outside the expertise of your people. Whenever possible, go outside the expertise of your people. Make the enemy live up to its own book of rules. And that's that number four. Make the enemy live up to its own book of rules is why libertarianism fails every single time.
Yes. And I talked about this in the intro too, that the NAP hardliners.
Yeah. I want to see a NAP hardliner who defends the founders, because those founders who were basically no different than Antifa, let's be honest. Because they were rebelling against people who were much smarter than them, higher IQ, much more intelligent. Well, they picked up guns against people who were not aggressive against them. Unless you want to say the government is aggression, then, ooh, what are we doing? I mean, these people, they cannot, for people who value consistency, value logic and reason, they fucking suck.
Yeah, it's fine to have those values, but don't extend them to your enemies.
Yeah. Well, and that the whole Capitol riot thing, I didn't agree with their reasoning for it, but I applaud the effort, even though it was pretty embarrassing. I wish it would have gone further. But that's exactly why, because if you really believe that taxation is theft or extortion and everything the government does is evil, and they are using our money to hurt people in other countries, and they're using our money and wasting it and giving it to their friends, and just they have the monopoly on violence, all these things, they are aggressing against us. Why are we just sitting around and taking it? So for the Sarwarks and anybody else who is like, well, you checked a box that said you would never use violence for political gain. It's not for political gain. It's for my fucking freedom. So, I don't know. They can all suck my dick.
You checked a box saying that you would cut your balls off. Why are you not abiding by that?
But you know what's really interesting is there's no box there saying that they will deny and prevent pedophiles from joining the Libertarian Party. And that happened a couple of years ago. And Sarwak refused to kick the guy out and give his money back. But, you know, if somebody says, oh, I don't know that Tom Woods is a nice guy, well, that's much more horrible than fucking kids.
That's
right?
A bridge too far.
Yeah. Well, good thing we're going to be taking over.
Yep. I wish you guys Godspeed. And, you know, the more people you can attract with a revolutionary mind rather than, you know, a fucking boring ass, keep the system intact mind, the better.
So I wonder how long until everybody else who's in the state Libertarian Party. Now, there's actually a few people who do know both of my accounts. And I just kind of kindly say, at the next meeting, pretend you haven't seen my boobs. But at the same time, I don't know who has the picture, but at the national convention, Spike did a shirtless picture by the pool, and it was just free the nipple sort of thing. And I actually asked him first. I was like, can I be in it too? And he's like, yeah, sure, go ahead. I'm literally standing right next to and slightly behind him, and they very awkwardly cut that photo off. But there was a huge crowd, and, you know, there I am just front and center next to Spike. And yeah, so they had to edit that.
Faggots.
Yeah.
But he didn't tell me not to, and he knew what I was going to do because he knew about my other account too. No, he's never been in my DMs as Samantha, you know, so. But Vermin Supreme, yeah.
Oh, wow. Huh. Wow, we've heard it here first, people.
No, we tried adding him to a naughty chat, and he left.
Oh, fag.
I mean, it really should get to the point where the LP, where there should just be guys hanging dong. I mean, what the fuck? You know, it's the Libertarian Party, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you had a fat guy, like, rush out on the stage and naked. Might as well, like, you know, have somebody with an actual big dick and maybe some tits around.
Or both. Yeah. I'm cool with both.
A guy with huge tits and a giant dick. That's what happens if you don't take over.
Yeah, that is pretty much what it's going to look like in 4 years. There is no take.
Well, that's how we keep the party from becoming Republican light.
Yep. Yeah, you got to have a little bit of degeneracy.
Yeah, but there's a certain kind of degeneracy, you know. That, yeah.
The Republicans have a certain kind of degeneracy too. It usually just involves a men's restroom.
Yeah.
Tap 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 tap.
Put your finger through the hole.
I'm sorry, Mr. Romney.
Oh, does he have to have his wife present?
All right. Well,
all right.
I think we've hit every wicket we needed to. Thank you guys for coming on. I very much appreciate it. Yeah, welcome to Boys Town.
Oh, thank you, Pete, for coming on.
Thank you. Thank you, Robin, for coming.
Or Samantha.
All right. Before this goes anywhere, I'm cutting it out.